Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacy Toth of PaleoParents.com and author of two paleo cookbooks. The first, Eat Like Dinosaur.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne, also known as the Paleo Mom. I have a background in medical research, and I love to write approachable explanations of the whys behind the paleo diet. I'm also the author of two upcoming books, The Paleo Approach, which is a complete guide to
Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Stacy.
Are we going to pretend like we haven't been talking for 20 minutes?
Half on mute.
That may or may not have been me. And I think there was a blooper for last week where you caught me on mute and Matt, like, played you at the end of the show going, I'll just sit here and wait. So our listeners can just know that sometimes Stacy's a flake and doesn't realize that she has the mute button on. The interesting part about that, though, was that you were, like, mumbling and talking to yourself while you looked up the answer to something, and meanwhile, I thought I was talking to you, and I was getting my feelings hurt, because I was like, why isn't Sarah responding to me?
And I am normally not the kind of person who just ignores people who are talking at, well, not adults, anyways, that are talking at me. I have been known to go, uh-huh, yeah, uh-huh, really? To my kids, but normally adults, I actually like listen and respond.
Yeah, I should have realized, but I think it was like a full 5 minutes. And
then you were like, a while.
Then you were like, Stacy, and I was like, oh yeah.
Oh, good times. This is a really professional podcast we do right here.
Oh, speaking of professional podcasts. Let me just remind everyone, in case you've missed the complete spamming of social media in last week's podcast, that we would love for you to go vote for us on Paleo Magazine Best of 2013 survey, which is still open through November 1st, 2013. So if you're listening to this podcast, please, by all means, go and give us some of your love with a simple radio button. Sarah and I are nominated in several categories, and we bequeath thee to go forth. We bequeath thee to go forth and vote.
And vote.
I don't even know what that means, but
I'm pretty sure it doesn't mean the way you used it.
I don't think that means what you think it means. Now we've officially quoted multiple outdated movies, we can move on.
We need more Princess Bride references in our shows.
I could just spend a whole show quoting Princess Bride if we want to do that.
My husband won't watch it with me because I say every line like a half second before the character says it as we watch the entire movie. Or at least I used to be able to. It's been a while.
I'm pretty punchy. We could just, you know, the heck with the show.
That's it. It's just going to be
a princess.
Stacy and I reciting The Princess Bride, and you know, forget the science.
Yeah,
it sounds fun.
So you want to know my exciting news for the day?
Only for the day, not for the whole week.
Yeah, it was just today.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm interrupted again by a kitten. This time, the other kitten. Earlier, when we were talking, the one kitten came down. Did you hear her purr into the microphone while we were? No, it was probably on mute while that was happening. Anyway, now the other one is here, and he's rubbing up on my legs, and he needs liver. Evidently, Matt only...
gave liver to one kitten.
He only gave liver to one kitten. It's the only way to keep him away, is like they play with it, like it's because we give it to him raw, and they're Bengals, and they're grain-free paleo kitties, and so they're about as like wildcat as they come. Maybe a Savannah, which is one of those huge wildcats, would be a little more wild, but I don't know. Anyway, when you give them a piece of raw meat, they literally attack it and start growling and like shaking their heads and throwing it a little bit like it's alive and they have to kill it. It's crazy. I should videotape it, only I'm too busy laughing while it happens.
Yeah, no, you need to catch that on camera. That sounds adorable.
Yeah, so they're little liver lovers.
Wait, so today's news. Yeah.
Today's news is that I took my sister to CrossFit with me. My sister, did I mention last week, moved in with us?
Yeah, I think you did. Yeah. I mean, you did to me. I don't know if we did on air, but.
And then I also wrote a post this week just kind of catching everybody up on why we've been under the radar a little bit lately. And one of the reasons is because my sister and my nephew moved in. We have a basement suite, and they moved into the basement suite, and it's been a little chaotic and hectic as we all kind of normalize and get into a new rhythm and routine together. And my sister went to my Barbells for Boobs fundraiser last week and was like, I want to CrossFit. It's like, okay. So I took her to CrossFit with me today, and she did awesome. She was a champ, and she did better than she thought she was going to do. And then she limped out of there telling me she wasn't quite sure she could make it home without turning into a puddle in her car. So I posted a picture on Instagram of us back squatting together, and I'm hopeful that I might have a lifting partner again, because I also finally talked about on the blog the reason that I took work off of week. Yeah. You can tell I'm punchy. I took time off of work the week before last because Matt actually had surgery, and he didn't want to talk about it while he was recovering because he didn't want a whole bunch of people being like, oh my God, are you okay? Because he's just the opposite. We've talked about his social issues. Like, he doesn't like people talking to him. It's just, that's my husband. So, he's okay. And no, it wasn't anything, like health related that could have possibly been, modified by, you know, healthier foods, or there was no, you know, it wasn't a bone break. It wasn't anything that would indicate that he's nutrient deficient, which is another reason that we were kind of paranoid about telling people, because we just didn't want to hear lectures about paleo not being healthy from the vegan trolls. But it was kind of a genetic thing. And he is fine. He had a surgery. He recovered really well. His doctor said that he's in crazy good health and recovered faster than the doctor thought, and everything's fine. He's been cleared back to normal life, except I've been told I can't punch him in the stomach for a while. So, I mean,
what are you gonna do?
I know. This is really the problem why I'm so punchy, just because I haven't been able to
actually punch.
This is terrible. It's not even funny.
A little bit.
Anyway, so he's doing fine and has taken back over household duties. Thank goodness, because I suck at it. I really, really high five to all of you stay at home parents and spouses, because that, I mean, I've always said Matt has it tougher than me. I've always said it's the harder job. I've always said I never want to do it. I've always said I don't have the patience. But, like, actually having to live it was tough. And it wasn't just doing it. It was a very busy week at work. So even though I was supposed to be on leave, I was being called and emailed regularly. And I was taking care of a sick person. So it was, like, it was just too much for me. I'm not good at the house. I wanted to call the pizza place and be like, can you deliver? But of course we don't do that.
I had a couple of days last week where I was like, I just wish there was some kind of delivery food I could order right now, so I didn't have to think about supper. I had a crazy week last week.
Well, there's a Peruvian chicken place within delivery distance from us that started delivering a couple of months ago, and we've made friends with them. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I love that place. I love that there is a place that delivers me Peruvian chicken, which is just rotisserie chicken. They actually use natural charcoal there. There's nothing on the chicken but spices. And, you know, when we've had a crazy busy day and we're running late, to not have to think about it and just be like, we could get Peruvian chicken. It is the awesomest thing ever. So
it probably is somewhere around me and I just need to go find it. It's just that when I'm like super stressed, working on the book is not necessarily the time. Yeah. Well, because at that point it's more work to go phone a bunch of places and find out who can deliver something that we can all eat than just find something in the freezer that I can throw together.
Yeah. Well, you are a better planner than us. Matt and I have openly admitted many a times that, We don't do meal planning. We don't do a lot of make ahead meals. And sometimes it is to our detriment when it's, you know, 10 minutes past the wining hour and no meat is thawed yet. So,
well, I think it's, I mean, part of it is because I'm a planner by nature. And part of it actually is like one of those weird hallmarks of battling an eating disorder my whole life. Cause it's like a large part of it comes from that sort of obsession with food, right? Like you finish a meal and you start thinking about what you're going to eat next. And that's, you know, part of it is just that I'm a planner and I think through the week and I go, okay, well, this is going to, you know, be best with this meal. And then this is going to be the vegetable in my crisper that's going to keep the longest. So we'll have that on Friday. But a large part of it is just like looking forward to food and really loving food. And so I think about it. So when I think about it, then I do stuff like take meat out of the freezer. I mean, it works now.
Yeah, good
didn't
on you.
Work years ago, but it seems to work now.
Cool. I just want to remind everyone, too, that you and I both have newsletters. And if you enjoy our banter and information of the show, you get even more of that and information in the newsletter. So people should check that out. Anything else we need to talk about before we get into a show?
We finalized design on my book this week.
Yay!
Yeah, it's going to be so beautiful. Like I just, you know, I said from the very beginning that I wanted it to be a very visual book and that that was really important to me. And I had a lot of direction for the designers and they came back, the very first design pages they came back with were awesome. And I made some suggestions and then they just took those suggestions and made them even better. And so I'm like really excited. The book is now completely in the designer's hands. And I don't have anything to do with the book for a couple of days while I wait for them to do their magic. And then I will actually be looking at something that is my book. It's like actually getting like, you know.
It's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's exhausting, but very, very cool. Like I've been working on the book for a year. Like it's been a really, really long, long road. So I'm really looking forward to being at the end and holding my little baby book in my arms.
Yes, it's exciting. You're going to love it. And you're going to squeal and do a little dance like you did last week. It's kind of cute.
Yeah, I probably will. We'll have to catch that one on camera. Instagram it, at least 13 seconds of it. Yeah.
Cool. So this show, kind of a follow-up to a show we had a couple of weeks ago, because we had a lot of question and follow-up.
Oh, what's funny is this is, like, earlier in time.
Yeah.
Well, we probably should have done the shows. We're going backwards in time. Yeah.
So we're referring to the pregnancy show, and we realized that not everybody is pregnant or will be pregnant or wants to get pregnant. However, there are a lot of women with specifically fertility issues, whether or not you want to be pregnant. We've talked about specifically with Stephanie Ruper of Paleo for Women, but in general about how fertility and, you know, normal, good, healthy menstruation cycles for women are a sign of health. And so this week's show is going to be on fertility, which is the precursor to pregnancy, but don't just tune this out if you're not trying to get pregnant, because I think that there will be a lot of information helpful for a lot of women. I think Sarah and I both can say we get a lot of questions from women who say that they have issues related to menstruation, which ultimately comes down to hormone dysregulation. And what we're trying to achieve with a paleo diet between low inflammation and what we're trying to do is, you know, regulate our hormones, blood sugar, all the stuff that Sarah and I talk about, sleeping and getting in the sun and all the lifestyle stuff. It's all because hormones are so important to health. And this will be a really good show to help you focus on getting healthy female hormones going if you have that issue or if you know someone with that issue. And I think all of us either had it at one time or know someone that suffers with female hormone imbalance of some kind. So hopefully this show will cover a variety of topics to help with that.
Yeah, we're even going to get into a little bit of early pregnancy related topics as well. So there should be lots of good stuff in this one.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
Science. So because it's sort of tangentially related to a question that we're going to get into later in the show, I thought it would be very interesting. We get asked often by women who are dealing with morning sickness, what are the best foods that they can eat? Because the stereotype is to eat, you know, saltine crackers. And so I really wanted to actually get a little bit into one of the more technical aspects of morning sickness, and that is the function of the lower esophageal sphincter. So the lower esophageal sphincter is a sphincter, which is a fun word to say. Try it now, everybody.
Wayne's World.
And it's located at the base of the esophagus and the opening to the stomach. And this sphincter stays closed until you swallow, and then it opens. And the idea is it's supposed to allow things down into the stomach and then keep stuff in the stomach. And this is the sphincter that fails with gastroesophageal reflux disease or heartburn, allowing the contents of the stomach to migrate up the sphincter, and that gives you that burning sensation. It's because there's actually stomach acid in your esophagus where it's not supposed to be. So morning sickness, you know, the real cause of morning sickness is the, you know, massive hormone shifts that are happening in early pregnancy. And it really does serve an important purpose. And that is the avoidance of teratogens in the diet. Teratogens are anything that can cause a deformity or damage to the fetus. And especially in those first 3 months when the fetus is much more sensitive to any of these types of chemicals. And that's why we have morning sickness. And that's why, you know, right around the beginning of the second trimester, when the fetus is, you know, mostly formed, but just still very small, that's when morning sickness tends to go away. And that's also when the fetus happens to be more formed and more robust. So the source of it is really hormones. But you can, by making choices about some of the foods you eat, make choices that will help. So we've talked a lot about foods that are easier to digest, things like braised meats, fish, well-cooked vegetables, anything that's easy to digest is going to help because you're not going to have pressure from the small intestines pushing on the stomach, which then push on the lower esophageal sphincter. The other thing that's really important to know is that protein can help tighten the lower esophageal sphincter. Now, a lot of women have aversions to protein early in pregnancy, but whatever protein source makes sense to you, whether that's eggs, fish, seafood, I had massive cravings for seafood early on in my pregnancies, meats, and then sticking with seafood is easier to digest than other meats. And then, of course, anything that's braised or stewed is easier to digest. And that's going to be one of the best things for helping with nausea and morning sickness and vomiting. The other thing to know is what can relax that sphincter. And there's a couple things that you probably are already avoiding if you're early in pregnancy. Caffeine, alcohol, smoking. Those are things that you're probably already not doing. But chocolate can open up the lower gastroesophageal sphincter, and so can high-fat meals, which maybe are not things that you're avoiding. And so can peppermint tea. And this is one of those crazy ones because there's such an association that peppermint tea can soothe the digestive tract, and the peppermint tea can make, you know, make an upset stomach feel better, but it can actually loosen that sphincter and make nausea and vomiting worse. Other things that can be really helpful: ginger is a really powerful antiemetic, so it inhibits vomiting, and anything that can help digestion. So papaya enzymes or raw almonds are often suggested, and that's actually because they contain digestive enzymes that can actually help improve digestion. So anything that you're doing to help improve digestion is going to help morning sickness. And that's all tied into the lower esophageal sphincter.
Fascinating. I always attributed my morning sickness specifically to low blood sugar regulation as well. Is there some scientific info on that?
There is a tie between insulin, thyroid hormones, cortisol, and estrogen and progesterone and testosterone. And so it probably, I haven't researched this in detail, but it probably has to do with that feedback that low insulin inhibits thyroid production, which really greatly impacts estrogen and progesterone.
Gotcha. Cool. You want to answer some questions?
Sure.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Our first question is from Megan from Hanover Park, Illinois. Megan writes, "My husband, who is also paleo, and I would like to try to become pregnant in a year. We are so excited, but also apprehensive. We have tons of friends and family members with various issues such as PCOS who have been unable to conceive so far. What advice do you have for women who are trying to prepare their bodies for pregnancy? Thanks so much for all you do. Your stories are so powerful, and you both inspire me to keep the good rolling each and every day. Namaste."
And I'm back. Sorry, we had a little moment with a cat again, and it's on Instagram if you need to see it. Okay, so now that I've refocused my attention for Megan and gotten rid of the second cat who needed liver, I understand her question to be that she hasn't actually started down the pregnancy path or trying to get pregnant. She's just trying to prepare her body, which I think is awesome. And it's kind of the basis of the Weston A. Price Foundation and Chris Kresser's methodology to fertility. So I would recommend that Megan look into those resources because they have a ton of information. But I think, you know, where Sarah and I would agree is that, you know, being on a very nutrient dense paleo diet and getting lots of sleep, regulating your stress, and getting as much sunlight as you're able. I know where I am, we're moving into winter. And actually she's in a colder place than I am in Illinois, but, you know, trying to do those things to help kind of hormone regulation and getting your body prepared for creating human life is the best thing that you can do. I mean, regardless of family members having issues, I really think from my own personal experience, I'm not a physician or a scientist, but my personal experience is a lot of these fertility-related conditions that women have are largely lifestyle-related because families live together. And so, you know, if a mom or a grandma or sisters had the same habits growing up, then a lot of times they're going to have the same issues because they've got the same genetics. But if you are following, you know, a paleo diet first, she says she's been doing it for 6 months. She's already gone off birth control to try to, you know, regulate her own hormones again. She's a healthy weight. So she's, you know, oh wait, she says she's missing periods, but she thinks it's from overtraining. So I guess she's working on that. So it sounds to me like definitely stress management. She needs to prioritize that, but also, you know, just really focusing on eating the nutrient-dense foods that we talk about every week. Last week in the supplements show, which we really should have named the Nutrient Density Show, you know, look into some of those foods to kind of really make sure that you're getting what the Weston A. Price Foundation calls the sacred foods, so that you're nourishing your body. And that way, when you get pregnant and your body has to build a human being and pull all the calcium to create bones, that it's not pulling it from your system and your bones, it's pulling it from the really nutrient-dense foods that you're eating. Got anything else, Sarah?
Yeah, I mean, we could tell her what some good nutrient-dense foods are. I mean, I guess we just went through this like three times in the last four shows.
Yeah, that's why I just said last show.
So, you know, one of the few supplements that have been really vetted in the scientific literature is folate for prevention of spina bifida. And it's really unequivocal that having adequate folate is really, really important 6 months leading up to pregnancy. That doesn't mean go out and find a folate supplement, but it does mean to be mindful to keep folate-rich foods in your diet. And actually, all B vitamin-rich foods are really good ideas. So your best sources really are organ meats and shellfish. But getting, you know, a lot of seafood, because those omega-3s are so important for neural and brain development in the fetus. And getting B vitamins, own egg yolks, pasteurized egg yolks, tremendous source of B vitamins. So that would, I think, be the only thing that I would really, you know, we talk about nutrient density all the time on this show, but the B vitamins seem to be particularly important. And the good thing is all of the foods that you would be eating to get B vitamins are super rich in all the other vitamins and minerals. So they're just darn good nutrient-dense foods to include. And I don't know why I just sounded so scratchy right there. My voice is doing something funny.
You're turning into a frog before our eyes.
My kids have colds, and I you know that feeling like right before you get sick where you're not sure if you're going
to? Yeah, it's needing to sleep and eating good foods. So let's hurry up.
Right. Let's go to bed. Okay, so our next question is from Rachel from Cairns, Utah. And this is actually a follow-up question to one that Rachel asked that we answered like way back on episode 23 with Stephanie Ruper. And so Rachel's initial question, just to remind people, was that she was wanting to get pregnant. She had stopped the pill and she wasn't ovulating. She's a shift worker and she exercises a lot. She does a lot of cardio. And our advice on that show was for her to slow down, cut back on her exercise, and also to sort of de-stress and not put as much pressure on herself to get pregnant, because she sounded like, you know, she wanted to get pregnant again. She's got an older daughter so much that that was probably stressing her out, which is probably affecting her hormones. She sent us a follow-up because she did progesterone therapy to try and get her to ovulate. So this is what she wrote. Since diet and lifestyle changes didn't work and I didn't ovulate after the 10-day progesterone therapy, we have been referred to a fertility specialist. I'm very frustrated because our sweet daughter desperately wants a little brother. She even has a little toy for him. I really appreciate you answering my previous question, and I hope this question also gets read. Is there something else you recommend me doing? How patient can I be when I don't see any results leaning toward ovulation? Sorry, ladies, I am very frustrated. We are hoping the fertility specialist can help us find resolution. My MD did mention it could be menopause, which is fine if this is the case. Okay, long enough. Thank you for reading this and being so wonderful.
Did she say how long she's been doing it, or she just said she started and hasn't seen results?
Yeah, when she sent us this email, it was probably about 2 months.
Yeah, I would say at least, you know, stick with what we recommended, because the stress, the hormone buildup of the stress to your system, I would imagine, could take up to 6 months. I know, you know, when we think about it in terms of like adrenal fatigue and what I had to do with my autoimmune condition, which was regulating my hormones, different hormones, but nonetheless, I know that it took 6 to 9 months. And so I would think that, you know, you really need to be patient with yourself and just relax and let go for 6 months. I can't imagine how difficult that is when you're thinking that your body's on a clock and, you know, you don't want to wait too long because you think it'll lessen your chances even more. But at the same time, if you don't allow yourself to relax and calm down about it a little bit, then you're creating more stress in your system. So you're on this terrible snowball cycle of messing yourself up. So I would say, you know, the same answer that we gave before. And although it's difficult to really relax and give yourself some more time and be patient and, you know, find mechanisms of things that relax you. I think, Sarah, we've talked about it before. For everybody, it's different. You know, for me, it's snuggle time with my kids or taking a Epsom salt soak, or sometimes I like to go shopping by myself without the kids. You know, like whatever it is that gives you joy and peace, try to do more of those activities.
I think when we recorded the podcast where we answered Rachel's question was before The Hormone Cure by Sarah Gottfried was out. I haven't finished reading the book, but I think that there's probably a lot of really good tips in that book. A lot of it is stuff that we talk about, the links between thyroid hormone, insulin, cortisol, and female hormones, and how important it is to manage stress and get enough sleep and laugh and have fun. Dr. Gottfried is very fond of the power of the orgasm for regulating female hormones. How it's important to not go too low carb. Going too low carb can be really, really stressful on the thyroid because insulin is required for the conversion of T4 to T3. Thyroid hormones. But that also means not going too high carb because having high blood sugars and high insulin can be really, really hard on the thyroid. And actually, both having too much insulin and not enough inhibit thyroid hormone production. So, you know, not going too low carb, but also making sure blood sugars are regulated can make a really profound difference. She's a shift worker, so doing all the things that we normally recommend for circadian rhythms, shift workers can get a lot of benefit from wearing amber tinted glasses the last 2 hours before they go to bed, which I'm wearing mine right now. I don't know if you are, Stacey. And using either getting outside if depending on exactly when those shifts are, during their day, if that happens to be during daylight, or using a light therapy box for 15 minutes, which gives you blue light exposure and sort of mimics the daylight signals to your brain during the day. Those things can be really tremendous in improving sleep quality, which then helps you regulate cortisol, which then helps regulate your thyroid hormone, which helps regulate estrogen and progesterone. And these things are all linked. And so when things are breaking down like this, it becomes really important to kind of tackle it from all sides, and pulling back on the intensity of exercise a little bit more and taking that time and trying to put it towards sleep and, you know, things that are more gentle activity. So instead of going for a run, maybe going for a brisk walk. So you're still outside and you're still doing something relaxing, but it's just not quite as stressful on your body. You know, all of those things could add up. And I mean, hopefully a fertility specialist is going to have some really good suggestions as well and be able to actually figure out exactly what's going wrong with hormones. But, you know, it's 35 seems there's a very, very small percentage of women who are actually going through menopause at 35.
All good information. I'm good.
All right.
Get you to bed. Move on.
Our next question is from Karen from Connecticut. And Karen writes, I've been overweight my whole life. I went full paleo in January of 2012. I did the try it for 3 weeks approach. So I went strict paleo right away, loved it, and just kept it up for about 7 months straight, watching 40 pounds melt off without even trying.
Then I got pregnant. I entered my first pregnancy with all intentions of staying paleo, and then I got nauseous, and it lasted for 5 months. I developed a meat and vegetable aversion, and the only thing that I could tolerate was plain white bread and saltines. I tried to diversify my diet with banana, yogurt, whole milk, anything I could stomach. Needless to say, the 40 pounds I lost came right back immediately, and I gained another 25 on top of it. This was on a body that the doctors told me it was okay to lose some weight while pregnant. Around the 7-month mark, I became normal again and went back to cooking and eating mostly paleo, but not completely. I sailed past my due date in a pregnancy that had gone very well aside from being sick. My son was moving tons, doing well. My sugar tests were excellent. Unfortunately, at 40 weeks and 3 days, there was a cord accident and I lost my baby. They induced labor and I was in labor for 41 hours before delivering a beautiful 7-pound, 5-ounce boy who we laid to rest later that week. The pain of this is completely unbearable. I tried to control the things I could and quickly got back to a full paleo lifestyle. 3 months later, I have lost close to 40 pounds of the baby weight and have just discovered that I am pregnant again. This is wonderful news and we are very happy, but we won't be celebrating until we are holding a healthy baby in our arms. All I wanted was to be pregnant again and have a hope toward the future. Now I'm starting this journey 25 pounds heavier than I was, and I want to make sure that I have the healthiest pregnancy possible. I'm hoping I can mind over matter the nausea if it hits as strong, but I would love ideas to help me get through this stage so that I can keep my weight in balance. I appreciate your time and advice, and I love the show. My basic question is about a health and nutrition during pregnancy. What foods should I be eating to keep my baby the most, to give my baby the most nutrients possible? And what foods would you recommend to help stay paleo when nausea hits?
Okay. I heard you
bring
up. And so, you know, we just want to all kind of say to Karen that we feel for you and that we're very happy that you're pregnant again. And, you know, I can't even fathom what that experience would be like. So, I'm just, you know, glad that you have an opportunity to have another baby. And, so hopefully we can help you with that as I stumble over awkward words, trying to figure out the right thing to say. Sorry.
It's okay. I think we've already really talked about, foods for nausea.
Right. So I think, Sarah, before we answer kind of, you know, what would we eat and health during pregnancy, I just want to state for the record that I had all three of my boys when I was 150 pounds overweight. So it's not to say that that's ideal. It's not to say that, you know, I would want to do that again. It's actually why Matt and I chose to not have any more children after our third pregnancy with Wesley, because it was really, really, really difficult on my body. There were days where I wasn't sure I could get up the stairs without help. So, but being overweight and not, you know, morbidly obese and problematic from that perspective, there women have been having babies overweight for, you know, as long as you believe women have been around, people have been having babies while overweight. And particularly if you're focused on health and focused on eating healthy, I think that that's, you know, the best thing that you can do. And I tried really hard when I was pregnant with all my boys not to get kind of fear-mongering. I remember when I was pregnant with Cole, I was obsessed with watching the Discovery Health TLC programs.
Oh, yeah.
It's such a problem, right? Like,
it is.
I was convinced that I was, like, had all these health conditions and that my baby wasn't going to be born right. And so what happened?
I stopped watching them. I was actually obsessed with them when I was trying to get pregnant with my oldest. And then when I got pregnant, I found like I just couldn't stomach them because they were making me so jittery and paranoid.
We had the opposite where accidentally got pregnant. I talked about it before. I hadn't had a period in years. I didn't realize that my fertility had come back when I started losing weight, and then I got pregnant because I didn't know that I had a period. Anyway, so I hadn't planned for pregnancy at all. It wasn't something that, you know, we thought was in our future, let alone immediate future. And I felt like I needed to bone up, and was watching all of these programs. And what it ended up doing was making me completely paranoid that, you know, I'd see all these women with all these health complications, and I'd like literally just sob and cry almost every single day and tell Matt, like, I am ruining this baby. I'm so overweight and unhealthy. There's no way he's going to be healthy. What was I thinking? This is the worst thing I could do. I'm going to have, you know, there's like a million health conditions you can get when you're pregnant, and a doctor's going to tell you they're all tied to being overweight. Never mind that they could be tied to, I've said before that I believe that being overweight or obese is a symptom of other problems. And so rather than addressing the issues themselves, like for example, gestational diabetes, which doesn't only happen to overweight women, if you are overweight and you get that, then you get this guilt trip like, well, if you had only lost a few pounds, maybe this wouldn't have happened. And if you have a doctor like that, run in the opposite direction and find another doctor, because I don't think that that is going to be the support system you need when you go to give birth and you want to, you know, entrust someone with following your plans and doing what you want if they don't even trust you to, you know, be a normal person. So I'm going to try to get off this tangent and this soapbox, but I feel very strongly. I used to be in some overweight, pregnant, and mom advocate communities before I focused a lot of my time on paleo. One of the things that I felt really passionately about was that the reason I got pressured into a C-section was because I had a doctor who was a fearmonger who wanted to schedule all of his patients so he didn't have to be woken up at 3 a.m. at the night, and told me that because I was so overweight, there was no way that I was going to be able to give birth and that my child would smother in my fat vagina. Basically. Sorry. I mean, that's literally brutal. What happens. So when I hear this question about, I'm worried about being overweight, I just want to tell you, like, do the research that you need to do and find the support system that makes you feel comfortable. Because as you get closer and you need to be empowered by your own knowledge and your own plans. And that's what went wrong when I first got pregnant with Cole, because I watched those stupid shows and I was convinced that I was going to have problems, and then my doctor told me I was going to have problems. And as a new mother, you know, you say to yourself, well, the doctor says my baby could die if I don't do this, so of course I'm going to do it. Like, of course. Why would it, you know, like, anyway, I feel very strongly that people who are made to feel badly because they're overweight when they're pregnant, it's wrong. It's really wrong. And I want her not to have that concern as she goes into this pregnancy, which she should be enjoying and relishing in and, you know, relaxing and trying to trust her body. And, cause I know that those things are going to be really difficult this time around for her as she's, you know, stressed and remembering the experience that she had. So,
yeah.
The more support and trust that, you know, she has about her own knowledge and her own body, the better. So that said,
hear, hear.
What foods should she eat to be giving the baby the most nutrients possible? We've certainly covered that in the last show and earlier in this show.
Yeah.
So how about what foods would we recommend to, eat when nausea hits? I am going to go out on a limb here and say I would make Sarah's plantain crackers. I think that those would be a really, really great source of healthy carbohydrate, bready kind of material. When I'm sick and I'm feeling nauseous, I also crave paleo muffins. Like, I like to make, you know, like an apple cinnamon muffin or something like that. Just something a little bready that feels like it's going to absorb, you know, And the great thing about like almond flour muffins, if you can do that, is that they do have some protein and calcium and other things in them. So it's not like eating an English muffin, which would be completely devoid of nutrients and wrecking your gut. So I would say, for me personally, if I was paleo pregnant, I would not be so concerned with, you know, the quote unquote rules of paleo, and I would not touch a Whole 30 with a 10-foot pole. I wouldn't touch a 21-day sugar detox with a 10-foot pole. I'd just really be focused on, you know, what do I feel like my body needs? Because I feel like your body will talk to you and tell you the cravings. I craved a lot of ridiculous amount of dairy. And I realize now it was probably because I was so calcium deficient, and it was, my body was just desperate. But so listen to the cravings that your body is telling you. And if you're constantly craving something like chocolate, then you might need magnesium. Or if it's craving bananas, you might need potassium. Or, you know, listen to what you're craving. And if it's something that's like a standard American food and you don't want to eat it because it's not paleo, like, for example, pizza, you know, ask yourself, is it the cheese that I want? Is it the meat that I want? Is it the, you know, crust? Because you can get all of those textures and tastes in other paleo foods. There are certainly a million recipes on the internet for paleo pizza. So I would just really focus on that. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I always craved, I mean, pretty healthy foods. So I remember having cravings for fruit. With my second pregnancy, I just craved fish, and that's all I wanted to eat was, you know, deep fried fish, but still fish. And I had cravings for, during both pregnancies, for tomatoes, which is really funny because I wouldn't touch a tomato with a 10-foot pole now. And I had cravings for cottage cheese during both pregnancies. And I think that, you know, really generally those are nutrient-dense foods that can fit within a paleo template. I mean, clearly with dairy, we always recommend getting the best quality dairy that you can, which means grass-fed. I would do some research about raw versus pasteurized and really weigh the benefits and risks of those before consuming them. I think that the risks are higher when you're pregnant with raw dairy, so that would definitely be something to research beforehand. But you can get grass-fed, pasteurized dairy products actually much more easily, I think, than you can get raw sometimes. So that's a great option. And yeah, when you're having cravings, you know, I've even now, because I've been having a lot of sugar cravings with the stress of getting to the printer. And what's really helping me is having a meal where I sit down and I put the most nutrient-dense foods that I have in my house, which are some of the most nutrient-dense foods available, and I put them on a plate. And I eat a plate of, you know, organ meat and shellfish and, you know, homemade sauerkraut and a bunch of vegetables and, you know, maybe a grapefruit or something like that. And when I eat a meal like that, it just makes me feel so much better, and it really makes those cravings go away. So when you're having – and cravings are actually, I think, a little bit easier to deal with in pregnancy than aversions, especially when you're having aversions to really healthy foods. And I think we've already talked about the importance of long-chain omega-3 fats from seafood and how important that is in pregnancy, and that – you cannot, you just can't get that concentration of DHA and EPA from any other food source. If you're only eating grass-fed meat and you're not eating any chicken, you're not eating nuts, you can balance your omega-3s to omega-6s well. But if you're eating nuts and you're eating chicken, you need to be consuming seafood. And we can get Monica to link to my couple of posts on the importance of seafood and whether or – well, the post that I think is called is, do we need to worry about mercury in seafood? The answer is, for the vast, vast majority of seafood, no, we don't. That seafood contains more selenium than mercury almost all the time, and that
protects us from the mercury in seafood, and it protects the baby from the mercury in seafood.
Agreed. I'm good.
So one last question.
I love that we're getting to a point with podcasts where we can just like say a question and then refer to other questions on shows. That should just be our MO going forward. Like,
it's probably so annoying as a listener, though.
Episode 23.
You're like, oh, man. Four. Now I have to go back and listen to episode 23. I don't know.
I don't think we do it that much. I was just making a joke.
But sometimes it is nice to say we've already given that a very thorough answer.
Right.
All right. So our last question is from Jenna from Kansas City, Kansas. Jenna, I just found out that she's pregnant, and she has a history of chronic fatigue syndrome, which she's managed with a low-carb paleo approach. And she reports in her history that she's very sensitive to sugar. I know it is a little early to be worried, but I am concerned about the glucose tolerance test that is recommended for pregnant women. I've read that some paleo slash low carb women often get false positives for gestational diabetes because their bodies are not used to the high amount of sugar required for this test. I also have no desire to consume a sugary drink filled with artificial colors and flavors. Is there a test I can do aside from chugging this toxic stuff? Should I buy a test kit and start testing my glucose levels daily on my own so that I have some data for the doctor before this gets pushed on me? Or should I request an HbA1c instead? I'd really appreciate your feedback, Sarah, or as my body doesn't cope well with high levels of carbs. I've been trying to add more carbs into my diet slowly for the pregnancy, but I've noticed the rash when I do, as well as nausea. And because I'm pregnant, I can't take Allegra, meaning I'm miserably itchy with a horrible rash. I have no nausea or other pregnancy-related symptoms when I eat low-carb, but I worry this is dangerous for the baby. I haven't been able to find a good body of research regarding the safety of low-carb during pregnancy. What do you make of my body's reaction to fruit and high-carb?
I took all those tests, but I wouldn't take them again. So I don't know what you actually, you know what? I didn't take them with Wesley because I had such consistent results with the first two that I declined and they said, okay, they weren't worried about it. But, do you have like a scientific answer in this? I do know that there are alternatives that you don't have to drink the orange sugary sweetness. You just have to meet their.
Yes. Like, some doctors will allow you to do it with whole foods. I had midwives for both of my pregnancies. And with my first pregnancy, they told me to do the test on an empty stomach. And with my second one, they told me to have a meal that had no carbohydrates, to have some protein first. And I don't know if this was related. I had gestational diabetes in my first pregnancy. And in my second pregnancy, my blood sugars were so spectacular. They had hardly ever seen some so low after the glucose tolerance test. And I'm pretty sure that was because I ate a whole pile of sausage before taking the test. And I had all this like protein and fat in my stomach to help slow down the blood sugar. I mean, I clearly also didn't have gestational diabetes like I would have known because I was so familiar with the symptoms of high blood sugar. And I really did legitimately have it in my first pregnancy. But in my first pregnancy, because I was morbidly obese when I got pregnant the first time, I was in a high risk category. So I tested early. I tested at 16 weeks with the 1 hour blood glucose test and it was positive. And they wanted me to do a 4 hour test and I refused. And I said, how about I just do the diabetic counseling and eat the gestational diabetes diet and test my blood sugar for the rest of my pregnancy. And they were like, really? You want to do that? You'd rather do that than do a, I was like, yeah, then do like a 5 hour, you know, not eat breakfast. So I'll feel extra nauseous and then eat a sugary drink and then not eat for the next 4 hours while you, you know, stick a needle into my arm every hour to confirm a result that will probably mean I have to do this anyways. Yes. So, you know, for me, following the gestational diabetes diet was not particularly different from how I was eating at the time. So, it was actually, you know, not a very big hardship for me. you know, all, both of my pregnancies were pre-paleo, so I don't know what I would do now, but I would probably ask if I could have something more natural, like, you know, it's this measured amount of carbs, so have that much carbs in fruit or something like that. But if I knew that I was really sensitive to carbohydrates, I think, you know, I think saying that you're already following a diet that is like the gestational diabetes recommended diet, and that should be enough, because if you have diabetes, the recommendation is basically a very measured carbohydrate approach so that your blood sugars never go high. And it's absolutely true that if you are eating a very low carbohydrate diet, you make yourself more insulin resistant. So when you have sugars that your body's not used to, you have high blood sugar. And so, it absolutely is possible to be getting false positives if you're eating a very low carbohydrate diet now. So, I think, you know, having a conversation with your doctor, those tests aren't mandatory. And saying like, you know, look, I'm already following this diet because sugar makes me feel so bad. And you know, maybe they'll be happy to have you testing. And I mean, I don't know if you necessarily need to go out and get a glucometer beforehand, but you know, if you do, then it's a really good argument to say, hey, look, this is what my blood sugars are like after the meals that I'm eating. They're pretty inexpensive now, and that's really, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what a doctor is going to care about, is that your blood sugar levels are managed. Because what the risk is with gestational diabetes isn't the, you know, insulin sensitivity part of it. It's the impact of chronically elevated blood sugars on the fetus. So if your blood sugars are managed, whether you have diabetes or not, I mean, that's the important part. So, you know, I think it's worth having a good talk with the doctor. The hemoglobin A1C would definitely be something to bring up, especially going forward if they start to get more nervous, because that gives a measure of what your blood sugars have been like for the couple of months previous. And so, you know, that's definitely a good option, and a doctor should be definitely willing to look at that, and look at blood sugar levels after meals in lieu of doing a glucose challenge test. Is low carb safe during pregnancy? That's not a study that can be designed. You can't take two groups of women and say, hey, you group of pregnant women, we're going to give you something that we know is safe. And then, hey, you group of pregnant women, we're going to put you on a diet that, you know, might not be, we don't know. Yeah, you might, you know, might be harmful for your babies. And we're just going to test it out. I mean, no one's going to sign up for a clinical trial like that. So those results are just not out there. I think Stacy and I have talked a lot about the importance of blood sugar management, but that going too low carb can be really, really tough on especially women's bodies. But because that's what you're doing and that it's helping you manage your symptoms and it's something that you've established and you know is working for you, and you know you have these reactions when you eat carbs, to me, it makes a lot of sense to continue with that. But, you know, again, as we've reminded people before, we're not doctors. And so that's definitely something to talk about with your, you know, healthcare providers and make sure that they're on board with that.
I would say the one thing that I've seen commonly among people who go low carb for long periods of time is that they become nutrient depleted. And that's not something that happens in a couple of weeks or even a couple of months. That builds up over time, and you don't start to see the symptoms of things until you've been doing it. For example, I was very low carb the first year and a half that I was paleo, and I thought that I was doing really well and was really healthy. And then it built up over time that I had all these micronutrient deficiencies, and my hair started falling out, and my nails were really weak, and I had an autoimmune flare, and adrenal fatigue and depression and all of these things that just kind of hit my body at the same time when finally there was, you know, nothing, there were no nutrients left. So I would say if you are, if a low carb does work for you, and for some people that's what they need, everybody's different. I would say it's really important to focus on using those carbohydrates to eat plant-based nutrients, vegetables that are rich, not just, you know, you can't just have cauli mash every day and call that eating vegetables. Like it would be my recommendation that you really focus on eating the rainbow and getting, you know, all of your carbohydrates from vegetables so that you're maximizing your nutrient absorption, because you need that when you're creating life. Yeah. I always use that phrase because I think it helps put things into perspective for someone. Like when we call it nebulously pregnancy, nope. What you're doing is creating human life in your womb. You have to build those bones and build that brain and build those eyes and do all of that yourself. And, you know, the more nutrients you have to do that, the better.
Yeah, she doesn't actually tell us like how low carb she is or what kinds of carbs she's getting. But you can stay pretty low carb and eat tons of non-starchy vegetables and be getting tons of nutrition and still be avoiding any kind of high blood sugars just by eating plates and plates and platefuls of, you know, broccoli and leafy greens. And you can go with like carrots and, you know, as much as I don't like nightshades, things like bell peppers and tomatoes that aren't, you know, going to impact your blood sugar very much, but are going to provide a lot of nutrition for the carb load that they have, or the almost no carb load that they have.
Okay, so she asked a question of me specifically that you didn't read. I'm just going to answer it really quickly. Regarding the whether or not taking Oxbile while pregnant is safe, I am not a doctor. I'm not a medical professional, but that is just simply a replacement for something that you would already be producing yourself. So if I were to be pregnant, I would absolutely still continue taking that.
I agree with that.
Is that a show?
Well, I think that's a show.
All right. Well, I hope you go to bed and get some rest.
Oh, I'm going straight to bed.
Make sure that you take your immune-boosting fermented cod liver oil and have your fermented veggies and your punches of vitamin C and all the great things that we talk about.
Yeah, I'm doing all the things that I know I can do.
Okay.
So the next I'll either not get sick or I will get sick. Yeah.
So go get sleep because that's the best thing you can do right now.
Thank you.
Cool. Have a great week, everyone, and we'll be back again next week with who knows what topic. It'll be it'll be Halloween next week. So make good choices, everyone. Make good choices.
It's going to be Halloween next week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
You're an old lady who doesn't keep track of the calendar. I understand.
You know, I
love that you're going to try to come back from that.
No, because I organized Halloween at the beginning of October. So my kids' costumes are completely done. Granted, we have plans to go to a toy store tomorrow so they can pick out the toy that they're going to trade their candy for after we go trick-or-treating. Mm-hmm. So we haven't actually done that part. But I bought some allergy-free chocolates, dark chocolates, to trade them as well that they don't know about. It's going to be a super surprise and they're going to be so excited. and their costumes are done and the pumpkins are already purchased. And so it's just all organized. That's why it's not on my radar. It's because it's all good. I haven't bought anything to give trick-or-treaters yet.
You are much more organized than me, my friend, because I'm having a huge party on Saturday. Our annual candy-free Halloween party has about 75 RSVPs, and my sister is literally sitting here frothing at the mouth waiting for me to get off the podcast so that we can finalize the order of things that we need to buy online to be shipped here. And I have literally been frantically organizing with my co-hosts. Bill and Haley from Primal Palette are coming down. Jill from First Comes Health, who wrote the book Fermented, is coming down. And Diana Rogers from Radiance Nutritional Therapy, who is the person that actually prescribes Oxbile to me, who also wrote the book Paleo Breakfasts and Lunches on the Go. She's been on the show before. All of them are coming down to do a giant book signing Friday night, and then we're having this party on Saturday, and we are severely underorganized, and we just decided on a group costume, and we're all kind of frantically trying to get it shipped to ourselves in time, so...
That's awesome, though. That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, it's going to be... And Bill will be here, so we can actually get good photographs.
He is such a talented photographer.
I know. So we're excited and completely unprepared. So I am going to hop off and make everybody remind them to be more like Sarah in the future so that you don't have a moment like I'm having. And,
this is the first year I've ever been this organized, and it was really only because of that crazy 6-day weekend I had to deal with.
And I would say if you don't make good choices and you feel like poopy the next day, listen back to our recovery show with Diane Sanfilippo Monaco. I'll put a link in the show notes. And as a reminder on the things that you should do if you've been exposed to foods that make you not feel well. But if you just make good choices, you don't have to worry about it. Make some pumpkin pucks and some pumpkin delight cookies from the website. Actually, we're about to post a Halloween recipe roundup. This is our third annual one, so you can go back to the 3 years prior where people submit their paleo Halloween recipe ideas for eating healthful, nutrient-dense, really cute and fun, adorable foods for the holiday rather than candy. And also, it's a plug. It's time to plug Gather. We're making a lot of menu items from the spooky spread in Gather, including eyeball meatballs and bleeding cupcakes.
Oh, fun.
Right? Who needs candy?
Exactly.
Cool. Have a good one, everyone.
Yeah, good night.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Oh, for sure. I always Google myself. This is before we had Monica. This is like old school show notes. I had to pause because my cat just jumped. Stop sitting on the keyboard, you pretty girl. I just want to eat you with a spoon. I do. I love you. I'm supposed to be working. Can you leave me alone?
I believe Kat's paleo.